Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Pump Site Geek, a lot going on in the world of sports. We have Chris Cartman at Camp Tanazona today, right there at Camp T, assuming that they've made it through the weather. I've not seen if they're getting hammered there. On social media, it doesn't look as though they're being moved around, but you never know at Camp T. Goody at the Movies will be with us today. There's some movies that he's going to talk about that just look dreadful on the surface. So we'll talk with Bill Goodykoontz. I was at the Tyrann Mathieu press conference yesterday, and it wasn't the typical dollars first thing. You know, this set really, at the end of the day, had very little to do with dollars and length of contract. I know you're thinking, Brad, I'm sitting here slaving away, not sure how I'm going to make ends meet. And that guy's getting, you know, a lot of money. So money should be the first priority. No, there was a different tone to it. It was actually kind of refreshing, or actually very refreshing for me. I'll get into that here shortly. There's so much Olympic stuff going on. I did not know this. Eric, did you know that Vegas, for the first time since 2000, is doing betting on the Olympics?
How is that even possible? How do you set odds on Olympians?
I'm going to go put money on China and badminton to win in the finals over Italy. Of course I am.
Well, as a producer, I clearly dropped the ball. I mean, today would be the perfect day to get Jimmy Vaccaro on from Vegas to talk about what the Olympic odds are.
We want the odds. But, my thought, and I thought the same thing as you, you know, we should have Jimmy on today. But, you know, tomorrow night we could do, hey, Jimmy, what are the over-unders the time that Michael Phelps is going to open his bright jacket with the, you know, all that fun, goofy stuff. But I think, you know, sometime next week, are they really betting that much money? Are they betting more money on the Olympic crew races? Mm-hmm. Or the wrestling, and it's no disrespect to these sports, right? But seriously, I'm going to go to Vegas with my guys, and I'm not going to shave. I'm going to wear my hat backwards, and I'm going to go put loads of money on USA women's equestrian, you know? So but why not? Well, that's a great idea. 10-1 odds. So, yeah, Vegas. And everybody loves to gamble. That's why I'm leading with this story. It's the first time since 2000 in Sydney that Vegas sportsbooks are betting on the Olympics, which I think is a great story. I read where there's lifeguards at the USA swimming pool. Now, I'm thinking that you and I have pretty laid-back jobs. Jared Nielsen has a pretty laid-back job. The lifeguard to make sure that Michael Phelps doesn't say, hey, I'm drowning. Help me. Throw me. Ryan Lochte can't get out of the pool. That sounds like a pretty good job. Now, they may come out of the pool with blue hair, given the water stuff that's going on down there and the sewage and all that, which may or may not be overblown. But I'll tell you, there's an interesting line from Jerry Colangelo. Jerry Colangelo, doing an interview, told one media outlet, quote, I'd rather be in Chicago than Rio. Now, knowing Jerry, Jerry is always somebody that is talking very passionately and positively about the Olympic movement and how great it is and having an Olympic representative. So you know that behind the scenes, for him to take a shot like that at Rio before they even get going means that it's all not good down in Rio. So we'll get into that as the show moves, because there's just so much stuff. There's a guy here in Phoenix that most of you probably aren't keeping your eye on. You got your eye on your fantasy football team, how the Cardinals are going to be, your favorite NFL team, why the Diamondbacks blow, if the Suns are going to be any better. I kind of look at sports in a way of, if I see somebody that I feel like you guys should know about, then I'm going to talk about them on the show, even if it's like, who is this guy and why should I care? Well, I'll tell you why you should care. So Bob Parsons is the guy that came up with GoDaddy. So he's a big deal in Arizona on a technology front. He also does gobs and gobs of dollars when it comes to charitable contributions and charity work. Bob Parsons also has become one of the biggest players in the sport of golf. Golf is going through a really interesting phase right now. Nike yesterday, Phil Knight said, we're not going to do golf equipment anymore. We are walking away from golf even though they have Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. They're not going to walk away from the apparel side. They're just going to stop making golf clubs. Well, Bob Parsons, a couple years ago, decided I'm going to get my own brand of golf clubs. And he's done a little bit of work with those clubs in terms of media coverage. He's grabbed Charles Schwartzel and some others. But Bob Parsons weighed in last night and said he's had already 30 Nike players contact him. This guy's just sitting over there in Paradise Valley, and you can see what's going to happen. And he's building golf courses below the surface. He's been pursuing some very big golf properties in Arizona. He's building a golf course. He's going to be a guy that it will change the golf. And I think he's one of these guys that if one of the sports teams ever came open here in Arizona, I don't know how much longer Ken Kendrick wants to own the Diamondbacks. I would find it hard to believe that Robert Sarver would walk away from an investment that is making him gobs of money, even though he's done very little on the court. Bob's one of these guys that, to me, it strikes me if he's going after the golf market, he's actually gone after Ping and ripped them for their gear. So I'm somebody I'm going to talk about in today's show a little bit later on and why you should care about this. Russell Westbrook gets an extension, and the first thought I had, it's 3 years, $87.5 million. First thought I had was, well, the free agent class next year for the Suns, because I heard Ryan McDonough say earlier this year, actually over the summer, he was on the Vertical with Woj, talking about, you know, being in position to pursue free agents, and the free agent class for next year continues to dwindle in terms of big names. So you start to look at a guy like Westbrook off the board. What direction are the Suns going to go? At some point, they have to go get that star player to further their venture into trying to become relevant once again. So that's all on my mind today. Eric saw Gleason the other night, and Gleason is a sports movie that I got an invite to it. I can't go to movies all the time. I would much rather go see Bourne than go ball my eyes out. But it's a football true story, New Orleans Saint, that has the football crowd really interested. I know we have Bill later in the show. He's not talking about this movie. So and I'm going to get into Tyrann Mathieu in a second. But I just want to know, it opens today. And was this movie something that our guys that follow football or have been impacted by ALS would want to see? Did you make it through without just bawling like a baby?
It is super emotional, Brad. It toys with every single emotion in your body, from happiness to sadness to frustration to just everything. And it's really, it's about a football player, but the movie is really not at all about football. It's about Steve Gleason's battle with ALS, and it's so well done. And it is it's a tearjerker. It's emotional. It's just awesome. I would highly recommend anyone who wants to check it out this week at Scottsdale Fashion Square. I believe that's one of the few places in the Valley, if not the only place, that it's playing.
I think it's the new Camel View that they're putting it in. So, and one other question about that, I'm going to get into Tyrann Mathieu, but so you're watching this movie. Are you thinking dude's going to check this out, or is it a date night movie, or is this just going to be who goes and sees this?
Well, I invited my wife and she declined the invitation because she just probably would have been crying through the entire thing. So it's not really a date movie. It is something that you should probably take your kids to see. It's a good family movie. It's just, I can't say enough good things about it. It was just really inspiring to see what Steve Gleason's been doing and what he's been dealing with for 6, 7, 8 years now, and he's still fighting it.
And as a football player, too. And I think that for our audience. All right. So I'm at Tyrann Mathieu. Let me get over to Tyrann Mathieu. So I'm at Tyrann Mathieu yesterday. And the press conference starts and his family walks out, which is always nice. It's always nice when I've been to, I don't know, hundreds of maybe even thousands of press conferences. And it's usually the player and the agent, or the player and the media representative and the general manager. And it's fine. But Tyrann Mathieu starts out and it's his family that walks out. And his oldest son, who I would say, I don't know, 4, 5, probably four, maybe three. I've had four kids. I don't know that. I just know that he became a star attraction in the press conference yesterday. So Tyrann Mathieu walks out. Patrick Peterson showed up too. And so the family is there. Tyrann's sitting in the middle and he's dressed nattily. He looks great. He has Steve Keim on one side of him. And on the other side is Michael Bidwell. And to hear Tyrann Mathieu talk. Now, we spoke yesterday about it. And guys, how many times have you read the garbage in the police reports and the guy that, you know, the guy that's trying to overcome it that really should not be given a second chance or even a third chance or a fourth chance, as so often happens in sports, just because a guy can tackle somebody. Like the Dallas Cowboys keep bringing in misfits and they can't figure it out to save their lives. And that's why they're not good. One of the reasons why they're not good. So Tyrann Mathieu is sitting there just talking very eloquently, and his son starts to get fussy, right? Pretty much a short time into the press conference, his son starts to get fussy. And his son becomes very fussy and wants his dad and is screaming, and Michael Bidwell's trying to talk over the top of the young man. And finally, he gets taken out of the room, and you can hear him down in the tunnel just wailing, "I want my dad." Ty is talking eloquently about all of his journey and what he's overcome. And people are asking him questions. Did you ever think you'd be in this position? And how did you get to this point? And Steve Keim reiterated something he has said to me before. And that is Ty's made me look at drafting players with troubled past or checkered pasts differently. It's made me a better general manager, which I think is good stuff. So it was one of those that I walked out of there and said, good for him. I mean, he joked a little bit about the dollar figure, and he actually finished it by saying, I think it was Ken Summers that asked him, what struck you most about this press conference? And he said, my son. And when my son gets drafted and he's up there with an NFL team, I'm going to sit in the back of the room and scream and cry and holler like a little baby to disrupt his thing. We thought that was great. It was great. Chris Cartman is next. We'll go up to Camp Tanazona. Always good to catch up with Chris. SunDevilSource.com. That's on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat. In about 10 minutes, we'll talk more about the Olympic Games. The top basketball recruit, high school basketball recruit in the state of Arizona who's looking at U of A is making a surprise visit to a program tonight. I will tell you where that program or who that program is and why. Give it some context. We'll do that in about 10 minutes. Good Eat the Movies as well as we get you ready for the weekend. For now, though, we go to Camp Tanazona. Chris Cartman is there, publisher, sundevilsource.com. You guys are also doing work around the Arizona Cardinals now, too, right?
Yeah, we just started covering the Cardinals, Cardinal Source, with Kerry Crowley, who we brought on, who's helping on both teams now.
Good for you. Good for you. Growth is good. So you're not at Rumsey Park today. Chris, I'm just curious on this front. Camp T sounds great, looks great, alums think it's great. In 2016, when you have to uproot practices and move them 15, 18 miles, I know they've done this before. How effective is that in this time of college football where Todd Graham's got to win games? I mean, how realistic is that to keep doing?
Well, I think there's trade-offs, obviously. It's a unique setting, unlike anything else in college football, frankly, Brad. And you get some benefits from a camaraderie and intangible standpoint value. I think the equipment staff have grown accustomed to having to shift things over to Rumsey Park. And they put a $500,000 field turf in. So it's actually a much nicer playing field. Of course, the weather, even though there's rain and that causes some problems, it's cooler here. So there's, you know, kind of that benefit. It's a big connecting thing for the fans. I think that they are hesitant to give up. And certainly Camp Tanazona, the field, is a real issue. I mean, they were in the middle of practice today, had a shovel out there trying to fix a hole in the field. And that's not something you want to have. The cabins are decades outdated. The place needs $20 to $30 million of an overhaul to be fully functional. Now, what they did do so that they could practice up here to start camp this year is they brought in a truck that would allow them to have the Wi-Fi and electronic capabilities so that kids could finish summer school, and that's been an advantage that Todd Graham wanted.
If you pulled guys aside, are there some that say, we'd rather not be here, we have a bubble down in Tempe?
I think you probably will get some of those, especially the veteran guys who have experienced Camp Tanazona a few times and been up here. And maybe to them it wears on you after a little bit. The younger guys are kind of more wide-eyed and willing to kind of jump into it and just embrace it for what it is. Now, you know, maybe it's hard in the moment, but I think, honestly, like, overall, I think the kids really kind of do like it, though.
No, I agree with you on it. I just think that practicality starts as sports progresses, Chris, and it becomes more of W's and L's. And I think in the Ray Anderson regime, he's looking at bottom line dollars with this stadium project, and every last penny is going to count. And if it makes you a better football team, can you quantify it makes us better by traveling up there? I agree with you. It's great. It's fun to go over to Tillman Rock. It's great to tell the stories. I got it. Not bashing it. I'm just wondering practicality. Some things you look at and say wins and losses. All right. So fans want to just know about the quarterback situation. Is this clear cut to you? To you, is it clear cut who it should be?
Definitely not clear cut. And I think it'd be wrong to feel that way given what happened in 2012. Taylor Kelly separated himself in the first week of camp that year after being third on the depth chart in the spring. Just today, Brad, we saw that Bryce Perkins has changed his throwing mechanics some, and I think that that's really starting to benefit him. I thought coming out of the spring he was really third, and he probably still is, quite honestly, and he's got some room to make up if he's going to move up. But he worked with Dennis Guile, who's a local quarterback coach, who's done some good things with some NFL guys, and just for this day alone, I saw, you know, something from him that I hadn't seen in the spring. Now, Manny Wilkins, I think, is the odds-on favorite to be the starting quarterback. He's the most veteran of the guys. Of course, no experience on the field, but he has an extra year here. Really good tools, good arm, quick, athletic. So you have to put him in the driver's seat, but we're talking about day two of camp, and these guys were too closely compacted between especially Manny Wilkins and Brady White in the spring to really have a concrete feeling on how that's going to end up.
Talking with Chris Cartman. He is at Camp Tanazona, publisher, editor, sundevilsource.com. He and his staff do a terrific job. To me, it seems like we can go through this whole exercise of who the quarterback's going to be, and at the end of the day, Todd's going to say, we'll play a couple of them, or maybe more, I don't know, at least a couple of them against NAU, and then they'll narrow it down a little bit more for Texas Tech. Am I making this too simple? I mean, it just seems to me that's what's going to happen out of all this.
Well, that's exactly what I've been saying here, just talking to people, that I would do exactly that. I think why wouldn't you play two quarterbacks against NAU? It's too important of a decision when you're talking about a sophomore and a couple of redshirt freshmen and then a true freshman, Dylan Sterling Cole, who's a really good-looking kid also. It's too important of a decision, Brad, to just go with the guy and then let's say he does relatively well to start, but then you get mid-season and you realize maybe this wasn't the right decision and you have these other guys that you didn't really get a clear enough look at. So I would definitely do that. I wouldn't play three. I think that's kind of stretching it. I would figure out who are our best two. I'd give them opportunities in the NAU game and then see if you need to do that in subsequent games in the non-conference schedule. But let's face it, ASU's not going to be in the college football playoff this year, right? And the odds of them being the Pac-12 South champion are very low. And I think that you have to make sure that you settle on the quarterback who's going to help you give the best opportunity at being in that position in 2017 when you have a maturing team that can compete at that level.
Okay, the two of them play. The third one, does he transfer immediately or do you give him the pitch of, hey, you never know, injuries and all that?
It depends on who it is. I think if it's Bryce Perkins, the fact that he's local and he's such a good athlete that he could play several other positions. He could play wide receiver, H-back. He could play outside linebacker, perhaps. I think that would lend itself more to the possibility of him staying. I think the other guys are more likely to transfer. And that's the business that this is. I mean, I went through about a 20-year stretch of ASU football history, and there was more than 15 scholarship quarterback transfers. So you almost have about one on average per year. And ASU hasn't had that many really at all under Graham. So you would only expect that that's going to start happening again.
Because I think in White's position in particular, given who his quarterback people were around him to get him to ASU, if you don't give him the opportunity, you may not get some of those other guys. I could be overstating that. I could be overthinking it. But I think his situation is a little different. Sean Aguano over Chandler High, you don't want to upset that apple cart because you have a nice pipeline there. There's really some interesting side stories to those two in particular.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to pick a quarterback because of a local high school connection and how that might be harmed by not going with him. But I
understand
that. I think to your point, I think Brady White, I mean, he's a quarterback and he's a D1 quarterback and he will play somewhere. And I think he'll be effective at this level. I think Manny Wilkins can play Division I football effectively at this level. So are they going to just sit around, especially in the case of Wilkins, where he's actually an older guy, where White is a year younger? There's very few Mike Brkoviches that are going to wait until they're a senior for a one-year starting opportunity. That I didn't expect that to happen when it did. He nearly transferred to UTEP at the time, very close. And so I do think the most likely scenario is you're going to have transfers.
Okay, player you look at and you say, boy, I was expecting a little bit more coming into camp.
Evan Goodman, through 2 days, senior left tackle, the only returning starter, has not had a good start to camp. I just don't see a sense of urgency. He's been beaten on pressure on quarterbacks. There's been some sacks. They're not even in pads yet. That shouldn't really be the case at this point. Now, Sean Griswold did tell me that Evan Goodman changed his whole demeanor, outlook. He was more of a leader in the strength and conditioning program this summer, and he felt like he was poised to have a good season, but we're just not really seeing that yet.
Player you look at and you say, wow, eye-popping, better than advertised.
Well, I don't know, better than advertised. There's probably nobody that's jumping out in that regard right now, but JoJo Wicker, who played as a true freshman last year, demonstrated that he's got a lot of potential. He's probably lost 15 pounds since last season and is just borderline dominant already. I think he's going to be, in years to come, one of the best pass rushers in the Pac-12, if not nationally.
Freshman class who's come in that's caught your eye immediately?
N'Keal Harry. N'Keal Harry, I think, is going to be a fantastic football player. He's gained 11 pounds from 209 to 220 pounds while maintaining the same 10% body fat, just looks every bit the part that you want. And then I also like Cole Cabral. He's a 6'5", 285-pound versatile offensive lineman who bends and moves well. He can play center all the way to tackle. They're looking at him as a long snapping option. I think he's been really impressive.
Academic concerns with this team. Anybody that's sitting there on the sideline or maybe?
J.J. Wilson. I haven't confirm this, but the first two days he's out, and I think there may be a need to finish summer school classes to make sure that he's good to go for the season.
All right, stay well, see you on Saturday up there. Thanks.
Sounds good, Brad. Thanks.
Yeah, there's Chris Cartman. Nice job right there at Camp Tonizona. Always good to catch up with Chris. On the other side, a name in sports you need to know, a name in sports that is the top high school basketball player in this year, who has decided on one of his stops, one of his five, and U of A has been in on him. I'll give you that update on the other side. And quite a bit of Olympic stuff I want to get to as well. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. In 15 minutes, Bill Goodykuhn. Stay with us. Well, the Olympics, if it's going to be like this in the news cycle every day for the next 2 weeks, I just can't sift through all the stuff. Some of it you just can't look at it and say, this really has happened. All the stuff with Zika and all the water, you guys have heard that for the buildup. But I think there's some other interesting stories, too, and I'll get to those in a minute. I want to first get this local note in. So the top high school basketball player in the state this year in terms of being recruited is Alex Barcelo, terrific point guard. We've been writing about Alex for 4 years now, and he's starting his college visits today. He's narrowing his list down to five, and his first stop will be Butler. which I know U of A is in on this one. I know Stanford is in on this one. I don't know if he's going to visit those schools. But terrific point guard. He's probably the best floor general that I've seen. You know, Jared Bayless was more of a scorer and explosive shooter. Alex is just, first of all, is a terrific family, terrific kid, terrific player. And he can go a lot of places. I know that Sean Miller and U of A have been very close with him. But he's going to visit the Butler Bulldogs, and it's the coaches there. The coaches have done a very good job of recruiting him. And I'll have some more information on his other schools and all that stuff later today, probably up on the site at sports360az.com. Some of you have been following him and see it on the – and that's one of my passions. I mean, I'm passionate about sports, what I do. But on the high school basketball front, I think it's really cool when you have a player that you look at and say, that kid's really going to be something at the next level, and there's no question that he is going to be. So there's that. Nike left golf last night in terms of equipment. Golf is a sport that is dying or struggling in our country, I guess is a better way to put it. It's struggling. Topgolf comes along and everybody wants to go to Topgolf. They can have some beer and they can have some cheese curds and they can have a TV set on and they can hit some golf balls for an hour with their friends and they can call it a day. Topgolf's doing great. I love going to Topgolf with my family. I really do. But I also, even though I'm not good, I shoot in the mid-90s to low-90s if I'm lucky, and some days I shoot in the high-110s. I just find it to be really relaxing, and you can use your mind to say, okay, I got to curve it around that tree, even though there's no way I can do that. And I've got to get it on the green, and I've got to do it in the next three shots, or it's a bogey, or in my case, a lot of snowmen. But Nike, I guess, has seen that golf in our country, and I've said this on the air, golf has a hard time resonating to the average Joe because the guys like Mickelson or Rory or Tiger in the day or fill in the blank, Jordan Spieth, make it look so easy that I think it's intimidating for most guys to go out there. I think it's also intimidating for guys who haven't played and they get their clubs out once or twice a year. And they go to their local course and they pay their whatever the fee is. And they see guys that are in great gear that hit it a ton and they don't want to be embarrassed. It's kind of like going to the batting cages. Like if I asked Eric to go golfing, you would not go with me. You just don't like to. You don't think you're very good. Actually, you're not. But it's okay. If I asked Jared Cohen to go golfing with me, Jared Cohen is pretty good. But he doesn't go often enough. And the social side for him, it's fine. He can work his way through it. I think that that is a sport that you just look at the Olympic Games and the big names that aren't going there. I think that hurts the sport some. This year, the majors weren't anything terrific. I mean, there was drama with Spieth melting down at the Masters. But really, I didn't hear the buzz among people this year. They're just average fans. Golf people, oh my gosh, you just don't know what's going on in the sport. No, I want to see the sport do well, obviously. But for Nike to say, we're not going to do golf equipment anymore. We're getting out of this. Phil Knight was on CNBC last night. Yeah, I do watch CNBC every now and then. They started doing golf clubs in 2002. But Phil Knight looked at the bottom line and said the annual sales were flat to down, and thus we are not going to do golf clubs anymore, even though we have Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. Well, if Tiger still plays. It's also a very crowded market, Callaway, TaylorMade, Ping, so on and so forth. Adidas announced last year that they are stopping golf sales. So, and these are primarily shoe companies, first and foremost, that have gone into the equipment business and have said, no, this is not a space we want to be in anymore. What does this all mean? Well, here in Arizona, we've got a guy, and he's more than just a guy, the founder of GoDaddy, Bob Parsons. Bob Parsons has a golf line, PXG. Charles Schwartzel is already on that line. There are several big-name Nike players that reportedly have been in contact with Parsons and PXG here in the Valley since this news of Nike came up. I bring up Nike because if Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods decide that they want to be with Bob Parsons, you can't look at this and say this is just some little throwaway story. And it's just one of those you keep an eye on. Guy in Paradise Valley, he's building golf courses, he's trying to acquire golf courses, he has his own line of equipment, he's very aggressive, He does a lot in the community right here in Phoenix. Really interesting guy from the story outside. I don't know him. I met him once. I would love to sit across from him and just say, tell me what you see in golf. But that's a story to keep an eye on. Hope Solo is in the news cycle. Of course she is. I would think if we were to ask fans of sport, most annoying athletes, you know, broadcasters, y'all make the list in Phoenix. If we asked worldwide most annoying athletes, Hope Solo would probably be on that list. I have nothing against Hope Solo. It's just a fact that whenever something happens around Hope Solo, there's kind of a, well, it's everybody else's fault, not mine. So this tweet that we have talking about what's going on with the Olympics. I mean, come on. And then yesterday, the soccer match, the opening soccer match, which the USA ended up winning over New Zealand, fans were chanting Zika. There's Zika. It's not Hope. It's Zika. So I'm sure her PR weasels are going to come out of the woodwork and try to do some damage control and take care of Hope Solo. Then there's Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps was announced as the guy that is going to walk the flag in for the United States tomorrow night.
I had the biggest smile on my face you could possibly find. I was pretty much like a little bit of emotion came over me. I probably shed a little bit of tears just of joy. Just the honor and the opportunity to do that it's incredible. It's a dream come true, you know, to lead our country into this Olympics. It's something that I honestly never thought I would have the opportunity to do.
Well, who does think that? Now, Phelps was the guy that was chosen. There was the backup choice, the person who finished second on this, reportedly, so the New York Times story, was female fencer Ibtah Muhammad, a close second to Phelps.
Really?
There was a belief, okay.
Really?
Okay, so, yeah. Now, why do you think that... why do you think she didn't get it?
Oh, gee. I don't know. Michael Phelps against someone that 90% of the country that she is representing has never heard of her.
Okay. Your answer would be right on one hand. The national sentiment by those on the ground in Rio is it would show an anti-Trump sentiment. Muhammad is the final name.
Interesting.
Now, I'm not down there, but that was viewed as it would be an anti-Trump sentiment, anti-Trump stance by the United States. You mean politics comes up in the Olympic Games? Stunning. Shocking. Sports360AZ.com. On the other side, we have Goody at the Movies. Goody has seen some movies that look dreadful on the surface. I'll be straight up with you every week. It's always good to catch up with Bill. We'll do that next. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, you need to get ready to go to the movies this weekend. It's time for Goody at the Movies. Bill Goodykun, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central, and he is getting ready for... Are you more into movies or Olympics this weekend or the next 2 weeks?
Sort of both. There's a lot going on in movies. The summer's kind of winding down, and I'm just a busy friend. I got to get a fall preview ready, but everybody likes the Olympics, and this this Olympics... It seems like it's shaping up kind of like Trump's candidacy. There might be news every day of a kind that we're not used to.
I was amused that Jerry Colangelo put a quote out, "I'd rather be in Chicago than Rio." Jerry's like the most staunch Olympic supporter ever. There is this fencer that finished second to Phelps to carry the flag out, and her last name is Muhammad. And the story today is it was too much of an anti-Trump sentiment to let her be the choice by those on the ground covering all of this. Hope Solo had this tweet about Zika, so they're chanting her name. Vegas is allowing betting this year on the Olympics for the first time since 2000, so I'm going to go bet on badminton. It's just, it's you know, there's more fun stuff around the Olympic Games than seeing Suicide Squad, I would think. Maybe I'm wrong.
I saw a New Yorker cartoon where they were lighting the Olympic torch, and it was filled with citronella. So that was pretty good.
That's good.
That's good. I did not hate Suicide Squad the way that a lot of people did. It's not that it's that good. It's not, but it's got a nice setup. It's cool when they kind of tell you where all these people came from and how they got to be where they are. But then after that, it just kind of falls apart. There's just like the actual thing that they have to do is really sort of disappointing. And the real thing that they should do is kind of going off on the corner while nobody pays attention to it, even though it's like there in plain sight. It's just the story's muddled and doesn't make that much sense. But that said, I thought the first half was pretty fun. I do believe, and maybe it's just because I'm one of the few people who didn't absolutely hate it, I think that for some movies like this, a lot of critics kind of prejudge it. And that sounds harsh and maybe not fair. But they're looking for problems instead of, you know, they're looking at it differently than they do other movies. Part of it is the hype and, that they build these things up where they're supposed to be these great things. But I think that sometimes they're treated a little more harshly than they deserve. Does that mean that in 10 years people are going to say this is up there with The Dark Knight? No, not at all. But I don't think that it necessarily – I think sometimes people just – they're waiting to use, like, their best funny, horrible line. And I don't – you know, I don't know how fair that is.
How are we running to the end of – I know we're not financially with the DC and the Marvel stuff, but how far can you go on this before it's like, okay, we got it. Enough of this. This was a nice 5-year run, 8-year run, but you guys have done it from every angle imaginable. What are you hearing in that regard?
It will never end until people stop going to the movies. How many, there's something like 10 Marvel movies all plotted out for the next however many years. Now DC is slow to catch up, but they're, all of this, not this one so much, this one a little bit, actually, there's some actual ties, but this is supposed to be part of their Justice League, the same way that Marvel has the Avengers. And sometimes you have kind of little offshoot movies that are sort of tangentially related, like Guardians of the Galaxy. Actually, I guess that's not really related at all. But
which was good, by the way.
Yeah, I love that movie. But it's never going to stop. I mean, until people stop. It's like, it reminds me of when I used to write about TV, and everybody complained about reality TV, and everybody swore they didn't watch it, and nobody liked it, and it was stupid. Well, somebody watched it. Somebody's lying, because the way that these industries work is they don't really care, you know, if it's good or bad or, you know, the prestige. They like prestige, you know, once or twice a year around the Oscars. But mostly what they want to do is they want to make money. And if you are going to blindly hand it to them every time you see a movie with Superman in it or Iron Man in it, they will gladly take it.
Good Eat the Movies with us. Indignation. Tell me about this one.
Oh, it's cool. It's Logan Lerman, who was Percy Jackson in the Percy Jackson movies, but better in a really good movie, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. He was kind of the main kid in that. And he plays a Jewish kid in the 1950s who's going to go to school at this small town in Ohio. And it's based on a Philip Roth novel. And if you've ever read any Philip Roth, you know that it's going to deal with someone who is a lot like Philip Roth, doing a lot of the things that Philip Roth has done in his life. And in this case, he gets there and he's not sure what he wants to do in his life. He's not sexually repressed exactly. It's just more of the times. And he meets a girl and it kind of throws him off. And it's really good. It's a movie about ideas. And I know that may sound boring, but it's not in this case. There's a 15 or 16 minute scene where the dean of students calls him in and wants to ask him about this one specific thing. But what he really wants to do is kind of let him know that he knows everything about his life, and he's watching him, and he's not happy about it. And Logan Lerman, as a Philip Roth type, is a brilliant kid, and he can give it back just as good as he gets. And it's fascinating. It's good.
And the last one sounds good. Don't Think Twice. It's only showing at Camel View, but it's got comedy, but it's a little bit of a bittersweet look at a comedian's life, right?
It's one of my favorite movies of the year, actually. It's I can't pronounce his name right.
Really?
Mike Bibliga. He's done some. He's one of those guys that you'll know him when you see him. He wrote it, he directed it, and he stars in it. And it's about improv comics, the world of comedy, as you know, is pretty weird anyway. It's kind of like it's got its own language, and they're, you know, it's very specific. These people are even weirder. because they're all improv and they're all dependent upon each other, but they're also really competitive because everybody wants to make it, you know. And this is about them. They've struggled for years, and a couple of them actually get the chance, the opportunity to maybe make it. And so what it does is it kind of looks at how that plays out. You know, obviously they're all friends. They're very proud of their friends, but they're also really competitive, and they want to succeed too. It's probably not a whole lot different than like AAU basketball or something, or club volleyball, where you want your teammates to do well, but you want to do just a little bit better.
You mentioned comedians and you know that they are in their own little world. It makes me think of the late Robin Williams, you know, somebody who had everything and then ends up hanging himself, and that there's a dark side in the world of comedy, and it's not the first guy that has obviously had tragedy on the comedic side.
That's where it all comes from. I mean, if all of those guys are working stuff out, I mean, if you talk to almost any of them, something happened. You know, they're trying to figure something out in their lives, and if you talk to them, a lot of times they'll say it's almost like a sort of a method of therapy. They get up there and they and I think it's kind of cool in that way. I don't really understand it, but they, you know, from what we see are the jokes that they tell, and either we laugh or we don't laugh. But what they do is this incredible amount of work, and they go to, you know, I was talking to Sarah Silverman once, and she said, she was at this ABC party or something. She said, I'm a little late. I stopped off at the Comedy Store. I wanted to try out a couple of new things. And it's just like, that's there. I can't tell the entire thing, but it was really funny the way that she described what she tried out. And it turned out there's a kid's comedy camp there.
Oh, no.
she said, I had to decide, do I want to do these jokes about this and this and this? And she decided, yes. And so she did it in front of these kids. But they're constantly working it and rehearsing it. Like what we ended up seeing, they've done a million times and they've honed it to, like, you know, just the right delivery, just the right words. There's no, you know, it's all planned. And I think that's kind of cool.
Let you go off that. Enjoy your weekend. You're going to Dallas soon, right? You're going to be dropping off, doing the tearjerker goodbye.
I don't have to be tearjerking, but I'm going to drive. Going to drive my daughter to go off to start practicing volleyball. So we'll see how that works out.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Stay well.
Okay.
Bye. Also good to catch up with Bill Goodykunz, Goody at the Movies, chief film critic for Gannett, and of course AZ Central. Bill is one of my all-time favorite people. I saw Bill last week when I was at the what was the screening? It was Born. Bill walks in. He's always got a smile on his face, and he's got his family with him, and you know, he just sits there, and the guy just does movies. It's cool. Sports360AZ.com. This weekend, Green Bay plays Indianapolis on Sunday night. For those of you that can't get your football fix quick enough, we have our first preseason game, which means there will be football going every weekend now all the way through February. So knock yourself out. The Cardinals have their preseason opener next Friday when they take on the Raiders. Thanks for being with us.